Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I am the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I am now pleased to introduce Mike LaFleur as he will introduce this morning's speaker. Mike LaFleur currently serves as the Director of Marketing and Community Relations for Housing Visions Unlimited, overseeing a portfolio covering 14 municipalities in New York and Pennsylvania. Mike also serves as a town councilor in the town of Camillus. He currently serves on the boards of several local and New York State agencies. He holds a bachelor's degree in business administration and a master's degree in business administration from Lemoyne College. Please join me in welcoming Mike LaFleur.
Good morning, everyone. So today I'm really excited about our speaker today, my good friend Ryan McMahon. Ryan was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, moved to Syracuse, and was raised in the Strathmore area. He's a graduate of Bishop Ludden High School and also a proud graduate of Lemoyne College like myself, where he majored in business and political science. He was first elected to the Common Council in 2011, and then the Common Council 2005. 2011, he was elected to the county legislature. On his first day in office, he was chosen as the chairman of the county ledge, the youngest person to be elected to that spot, and he hit the ground running right away. We've seen record low tax rates for county residents, and back when he first got started, he negotiated a tax agreement that was really beneficial to not just the city of Syracuse, but the county as a whole. This past fall, after nearly 7 years in that role, he was appointed as our fourth county executive, and he's hit the ground running, and it's really exciting to see the stuff that he's been doing and he's going to do. As you know, a year ahead of time, he negotiated another sales tax agreement, which still benefits the city and the county greatly, and he's been very proactive. We saw last week, and most of you hopefully agree with this, taking a proactive stance on the Wellington House out in the Fayetteville-Manlius area, which is really important to a lot of the area, and applaud him for that. So all those things aside, his greatest accomplishment, and hopefully he'll support me on this, is convincing Caitlin to marry him. They've got three wonderful children that are quite a handful because they're quite young still. So it's my honor to introduce our fourth county executive, Ryan McMahon.
That's very nice. Yeah, keeping Caitlin convinced that she made the right decision is tough. But thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to get in front of you. This is great. And many of you I know we have County Legislator Peggy Chase here today. Peggy, thanks for coming. She's been a great partner. I don't know if I have any other colleagues at the legislature here with me. Linda's here. Linda, there she is coming in. Hello, Linda. Good morning. Linda's a great partner. But what I thought I would do is kind of go over our first 180 days in office and then go over really what our vision's like and then open things up for questions. And so I got into this role a little bit differently when Joni Mahoney, who we all know, it moved on. The county charter says that it's a decision of the legislature. And one of the great things that really meant a lot to me when that happened, I asked my colleagues for their support, and I received overwhelmingly bipartisan support, almost unanimous support for the role. And our colleagues took politics out of that decision, and that's what we've been trying to do with all of our decisions, is lead it in a way where we're taking politics out of it and we're really accomplishing things and getting things done. And one of the things that this job allows you to do that the county legislative chairman job does not is it really allows you to advance an agenda and have a team behind you, which I have many members of my team here, and they do a great job, to really push that forward. And one of the things that I felt immediately that we had not done a very good job at as a community, specifically on the issue of poverty, is A, talking about it, and B, telling our story. And so immediately what we started doing is we went out and started having town hall meetings. And we've had 13 town hall meetings. Think about that. In 180 days, we've had 13 town hall meetings. I'm willing to bet you could take almost every other executive before me over the last 10 years and every other politician, and they haven't combined had 13 town hall meetings. And what we did, no matter where we went, whether it was the town of Skaneateles, Atlas, town of Camillus, the city of Syracuse, we talked about poverty. And we talk about it for a couple of reasons. One, these are our neighbors, and these are our residents and my constituents that we really need to look at why they are at this point in life and what have we done right and what have we done wrong as a community to have the concentrated poverty rates in the city of Syracuse and minority communities and the extreme poverty that we see in rural communities. And we do have poverty in suburban communities as well. If we didn't, we would have no need to have a WIC office in the town of Clay, right? So this is a tough issue to talk about because it's an issue that doesn't reflect well on a community. And so instead of letting data define us like we have, where a study is done by a university and it shows data figures that are unacceptable, we're gonna talk about it and we're gonna tell our story. And we're going to hold ourselves accountable. And all of our partners in government and in our nonprofit sectors, we're going to hold each other accountable, look at what is going well, and where are the gaps. And so that's really what we've done. And so when we look at poverty, we've really been focused in on six areas. And under each area, we've been focused in on long, mid, and short-term solutions. And some of those things we've talked about and we've announced, and we've had little nice little announcements, and they fit into our poverty platform. But when you look at housing, when you look at health, when you look at workforce, when you look at education and transportation and what we call early childhood, in each of these six areas, we need real short, mid, and long-term solutions. When you're looking at, you know, housing, we had a nice little announcement this week for affordable housing for our veterans with tiny homes. We were able to secure and save some Medicaid funding that we were able to allocate, and we'll have seven new tiny homes built on Marquette Street, on West Madison Street, and on the corner of Highland and Knoll in the city of Syracuse for affordable housing for vets who have addiction and substance abuse issues or mental health issues. If you want to look at our Higher Ground program that we're working with, great partners with John Tomino and the city of Syracuse, where instead of looking at the panhandling issue through the lens of enforcement, we're looking at it through a lens of engagement. And that's an issue that I evolved on since I was in this role, where we're going out and engaging with folks, and we're offering them day work programs where they can go earn a paycheck for a day and get off the streets, and that gives us an opportunity to engage with these folks. And every time we have an opportunity to engage, we get to get them the services they need, learn more about their situation, encourage them, if they are homeless, to get into one of our shelters that we fund, and start the healing process. And everything we do in poverty is based around the fact that we believe work is dignity, and no matter at what point you are in your life, earning a paycheck has real, real value and brings it real dignity. So we spend a ton of time on poverty and the human services side of things. And it's so gratifying because in county government, we do human services. And each day, when you're in this business and you're the quarterback of this business, you get some really tough stories. And they're really tough. But it's good to get out there because when you see the good stories and you see the good work that people are doing, it helps offset that. And another piece of our P of our pie, and we'll get into our whole pie, but is early childhood. So this is a new focus of ours, and we're gonna ask the legislature in our budget coming up to really partner with us on this. Because when you look at early childhood, right now we have 38% of our children countywide are kindergarten ready. 38% countywide. Think about where you live, whether you're in Fayetteville, Manlius, Clay, Cicero, Camillus, Onondaga, the city of Syracuse, 38% of our children are kindergarten ready. And when I was a city councilor, we used to say, we knew this was an issue, but we thought the way to get to the children was full day pre-K. So we started that, and we started some funding for that with the school district, and the state really got behind that. But that is not, it's too late. full-day pre-K is too late. We have to get to the kids when they're babies. And so we're going to partner with a partner in our budget, and we're going to put substantial funding behind early childhood to make sure we're intervening with these children from birth all the way to school so they're kindergarten ready. It's 38% countywide. It's 22% in the city of Syracuse. And so these are that. If you want to know why we're looking at poverty, this is you know a battleground here. We also know that there's 360 families that are what we really define as generational poverty. And out of these 360 families, most of them being young mothers, we also know that these young mothers were all on temporary assistance when they were children, their mothers were. So that's what generational poverty is. The good news is the number of 360 is not that overwhelming. That doesn't mean we only have 360 families that are poor. Poverty needs to be a temporary point in a person's time of life, and we have many people who are poor, but when we look at generational poverty, that is not a overwhelming statistic, and we can really make progress. So internally, our teams are focused on what are we doing well, engaging these families and making sure that these young mothers have the opportunity to get work training, to get jobs placements, to get the services they need, whether that's making sure that their children have daycare or whatnot, so that they can take that courageous step out of this way of life. And at the same time, making sure that we engage with these children and get them the health care they need, make this the social care they need, all the services, so that we break that cycle. And so our teams are engaged day in and day out on this. This issue, and I know I see Sarah Merrick here today, who's really a leader in that, and she does a wonderful job. But we're excited about the opportunity to really make a dent into generational poverty in this community. And that's something we're very, very focused in on. On education, when you look at our long, mid, and short-term strategies, we're really excited about a couple things here. And we've partnered with the City of Syracuse and Mayor Ben Walsh, the City School District, and OCM BOCES to really have a transformational idea that now we're going to put into practice, and that's a countywide STEAM school. And the STEAM is your STEM education with the arts. And the arts are important because we don't have that component now. But also, when you think about tech, and you think about tech talent and technology, if you talk to these CEOs, when they're looking for employees, they're always driving back to the arts. People who have the creativity, that the way their brain works, those are good technology employees. So when you look at the jobs that are going to be here tomorrow and the day after and the day after, we know in our economy we are really excelling in defense and aerospace clusters, economic clusters. When you look at Saab, you look at JGB, you look at Lockheed Martin, SRC, Anaran, TTM, these are all companies that have won long-term contracts. They're innovating, they're developing, the R&D is here. Carrier still has 1,400 R&D jobs here. A lot of people don't realize that. So a lot of innovation's going on here. They're all hiring. There's not enough engineers to hire them all right now. So that's a population growth opportunity for now, but for us to keep these jobs here, and specifically their next growth opportunity, we need to have the workforce. So how do we do it? We got to develop it, and we got to start from the bottom up. So the countywide STEAM school would look like this. You would have 1,000 kids. You would have 600 children coming from the city school district, 400 children coming from the suburban districts. Why is that important? Because the suburban districts, this is a shared service opportunity as well, because the suburban districts, to compete, need to be able to offer STEM education. They have to. So if you live in a suburb, this is really important to you because it's going to save you money. Because to compete for that, if you don't have the physical space, and many of these school districts don't, you would have to build it out. It's going to cost money. You have to staff it. That's going to cost money. So this is really a shared service high school, 9 through 12, that we hope to have online in 2021. And this is really it's going to be at the old Central Tech. Everybody knows where Central Tech is. Beautiful building, a lot of history, and it will help extend downtown It fits within Mayor Walsh's Syracuse Surge strategy. And in addition to that, it's going to create this workforce pipeline going forward. Also, Le Moyne College is really doubling down on their efforts in this space with what they with their program Erie 21, which they're going into the lowest performing city schools and really integrating their team with the students, teaching them STEM all the way through middle school, up through high school, and then into college. So we need to be in this space. We have good long and mid-term approaches there into our long, mid, and short-term strategies. So we feel really, really confident about that. I want to thank the legislature, the county legislature, our role. You can say, what's the county's role? Our role, besides being a big cheerleader, is we are probably going to bond to get the project done. So we're going to use our credit card, and then we'll get paid back via state aid so that this project doesn't go through. So that's, yes, and make sure you let the legislators know how good of an idea this is. This is a great idea. Both Linda Irvin and Peggy Chase supported this. They really need to be applauded for that. But this is big for our suburban districts. It's big for the city. I've heard, how do you know the kids will come down to, you know, the suburban kids will come to the city? This is, you're talking about a building in downtown. Their parents come down every day. Of course they're going to come down. If you're looking at the arts, and that's what you do if you live in Fabius or Manlius, there's one of the greatest auditoriums in the country in that building. It's a historical auditorium. So of course they're going to come. So it's really something that we have a unique opportunity to get done. Let your state legislators know in the Assembly and the Senate that they need to get behind this. We think they are, but they're going to have to step up next. It's their turn next. So that's really when you look at our poverty, all these things that we're doing all come together. And the next piece of our pie, which we call our three main things we focus on, is infrastructure. And the one little piece of infrastructure I want to talk about, so everyone understands the challenge, because at some point we're going to need your help, is the wastewater infrastructure. And I didn't think I'd become famous talking about wastewater, but I'm proud to own it. And the current system, 80% of the county, maybe 85% of the county, falls within our wastewater system. If you live in the southern towns and some of the western towns, you probably don't. You may be under a well and septic. But for everybody else, they either go into, the wastewater gets treated into one of our six facilities. And we own the facilities, we have the permit, we have the regulatory responsibility, the environmental stewardship of this process. The problem is, we don't own the pipes in between the houses or the businesses and the facility. So when the pipes get old, they start to fail. They start to leak, they start to collapse. The byproducts of that are sewage backups in neighborhoods. I know in Peggy's district in Eastwood, there's been horrible backups. And the other piece of it, though, is clean water enters the wastewater system. And we're only allowed to treat so many gallons of wastewater per day. And when you have all this clean water invading your wastewater, we don't get to figure out what's clean and what's waste. We just treat. So when you treat more than you're supposed to, you get fined. And then when you have really wet weather events, you can't treat at all, that gets discharged. Once you start discharging things into the environment, in the town of Manlius, we have Meadowbrook Limestone. It gets into Limestone Creek. Eventually, you'll have a scenario where that untreated wastewater will flow into Oneida Lake. So when that happens, you get a real big problem because the DEC's very, very aggressive. So for years, the pipes have been getting older. The county, they're not really the county's problem because we don't own them, right? They're not our problem. We can be very parochial and say, not our problem. Someone else needs to go fix them. That's causing our problems at the facilities. And it is. That's accurate. But the municipalities that own these pipes can't afford to fix them. Let's be honest. The city of Syracuse can't afford to fix their wastewater pipes. The towns, they try. Some towns are better than others, and they'll invest in them, but it's not enough to keep up with them. So what does it mean? It means for when you get under a consent order, which we are dangerously close to being under in some of our pockets of our county. That means a couple things. One, it's expensive. They want you to either build out very large tanks, which cost $20 or $30 million, and to capture all this excess water. The problem is, if that's your approach, that's a short-term approach, because the pipes continue to fail, more water continues to come in, and in 10 years, we will either have failing pipes where they aren't working at all, or we'll need to build a new tank. Or we can go fix the pipes, right? We can fix them. And if we fix the pipes, we're looking at a 70-year solution, and 70 years, and we may not need new tanks. But the other pieces of the moratorium are, or of a consent order, is a moratorium. So for every new gallon of wastewater you want to bring into the system, a new business opens up, they want to hook up, they're going to have so many gallons, you have to remove 6 gallons, 8 gallons, 4 gallons. And think about that. For every new gallon, you have to remove so many others. That's really a moratorium. It's a moratorium on development. It's a moratorium on growth. And when you can't grow, growth means different things, right? When some people hear that, they think sprawl. That's not really what we're talking about. If you have a food processing plant, or a Anheuser-Busch or a Pepsi, and they want to put on a new product in that plant, and that new product has different waste that's going to put stress on the system, they can't. So where does that investment go? It goes somewhere else. So then eventually you lose that investment, which would mean jobs here now. But eventually, if they go somewhere else, you're competing now for the jobs you have there. You already lost the growth. Now you're competing for the jobs. So this is about jobs. This is about keeping the companies we have here. It's about redeveloping old neighborhoods and still looking at new neighborhoods. And if we don't fix the pipes, we can't do any of it. And you can't plan. How can we plan as a county when our infrastructure is failing? So we want to have a countywide plan. Part of that plan is we got to fix the pipes. So we're proposing that we take over the ownership. We correct the ownership issue with our suburban partners. We want to start in the east side of the county. So the town of Manlius, the village of Fayetteville, the village of Manlius, part of the town of DeWitt, part of the city of Syracuse. And we'll go through and put forward a 20-year capital plan to fix the pipes throughout these 6 areas of the county in our 6 wastewater districts. And it's going to cost money. But at the same time, what is happening is we're saving $2.50 per gallon for every gallon of water that we capture, of clean water. If we put forward a comprehensive plan, we think we'll get some real state assistance. And eventually, we'll have the system corrected. So really, if you have small gradual bumps in the sewer unit charge, at some point, the capital cost won't be there. And you'll be able to lower it. But it's a much cheaper solution overall than doing nothing. Because what will happen for doing nothing, if you live in a town, towns bill this service differently than villages do and the city does. So if you live in a town, they have various sewer districts. Some of these sewer districts have 500 homes, 1,000 homes. Some of them have 60 homes. So you can imagine if you're in a sewer district and you have 60 homes in that district, and then all of a sudden there's a $5 million piece of infrastructure that needs to get fixed. That infrastructure is going to, that cost is going to be borne on those 60 homes. So what's the end result? I can guarantee you it's 64 sale signs, because your sewer bill will be triple or quadruple what your property tax bill will be. So by correcting the ownership, we're also correcting the way that we pay for this infrastructure, which is certainly going to be more efficient. And we have the permits, we have the wastewater treatment facilities, we have the technical expertise, we're positioned well to lead on this, so we're going to push. Now, villages can get this done through IMAs with us, the city can get this done via IMAs, but towns need to have referendums. So we're going to strategically come out and we're going to work this year, hopefully, with the town of Pompey and Manlius, and try to get referendums on the ballot and educate the community on why this is the right call for them. And this should be a no-brainer. These pipes are liabilities. but you never know. And so that's how this process will start. So if you're in those towns, we're going to need your help, or else there's going to be payment shock, because these pipes, the DEC is willing to go past the county for the first time ever to go to the local municipalities and say, this is your problem, you got to fix it. And then the E of our pie is economic development. And I see David Michael here, somebody I know knows a little bit about economic development, and Don Western, yeah. But what we've done is we've re-engaged our local business community. I've spent a lot of time knocking on doors, old salesman approach, wearing out the shoe leather, talking to companies, understanding what their strategies are. What are your 5-year plans, your 10-year plans? How are we competitive? Where do we fit into your growth strategies? How don't we fit into your growth strategies, and why? And these are really fruitful conversations. In addition to that, I've been aggressive, and we went to a site selector conference in Salt Lake City. And this was really, really interesting, because what this conference was 51 of the world's best site selectors. So their clients are companies that have a $30, $40, $50 million investment they want to make. They hire these folks, and they go find the community where they should make the investment. And so this is very fruitful. We were talking about our White Pine Business Park, which is well-positioned for a growth opportunity. But the messaging we heard was so valuable, because we had the opportunity to sit and talk with the executive from Amazon who made the HQ2 decision. And she focused more on what the state of Virginia did right than what happened in New York City. But she basically told us what happened in New York City with the first two things. The first two things that they said when you're looking at an investment in a community is, one, the community needs to want you. If they don't want you, they're not even going to show. So in Long Island City, that kind of went off the rails when they got there, and the community was a lot of protests, a lot of this. So right away, remember, Amazon had 250 other communities that were begging for this opportunity, so they pulled the plug, right? They didn't have to say anymore. Two, the leadership in the community needs to be aligned, because if they don't treat each other well, how are they going to treat the company well? So think about that. That hasn't always been the case here the last few years, has it? So that's changed, though. That's changed. And we can get into that in a little bit. But three, why Virginia won the technology jobs. And these were technology jobs, right? $150,000 a year jobs. Besides being in a larger metro area that they know they could recruit immediately to, that was important. But the state of Virginia invested $1 billion in K-12 STEM education, and they moved a satellite campus of Virginia Tech next door to Amazon's headquarters. Now think about what I learned from that is that our strategy here locally is where we need to be. That's where we need to be. We just talked about a countywide STEAM school. We talked about some of the partnerships in higher ed. OCC, Syracuse University, all want to partner in this space with us as well. So that at least shows us we're on the right track when you look at from a CEO of the largest economic development deal in the history of the country, what they were looking for. So that was really good. But we're seeing growth in economic clusters that we do well in. We want to double down our investment and our time in those areas. When you look at our defense aerospace, you look at the UAS industry, how that's growing. We just had the Genius New York competition here earlier this week. Look at food and ag, processing, manufacturing. We're still doing very, very well there. Ads and meds, healthcare. These are all areas, plastic and metal fabrication, manufacturing. We still do very well. So this is where we should spend our time, and we should double down on our infrastructure investments. So we have the sites, we have the infrastructure that works, because one thing we have that we haven't really been able to sell yet that's going to be more and more valuable going forward is water. And we have an access and abundance of it, so that's really where things are going to go in the future. So that's kind of what we've been doing. We're seeing some results. We're seeing a lot of activity. Hopefully we'll have some really, really neat announcements later on in the year as these deals take a little bit of time. But we have a lot of activity. And obviously, the growth downtown has been tremendous. The mayor's Syracuse Surge plan is really exciting. We're happy as we're riding up in the elevator with a couple folks. and they were asking me how many different municipalities I represent. So the answer is 19 towns, 15 villages, and a city. So anytime the leader has a vision for their municipality, that saves us work. And when you have a leader who has a vision that makes sense and is aligned with yours, that's even better. And so we're here to complement the mayor in various ways in our way we partner, and we will. And when you look at the lakefront, what's happening around the lake, we're seeing growth. We're really excited about our Roth Steel site that we stopped from being a pick and pull trash yard on Onondaga Lake. And now we've been remediating it, and now there's a lot of private sector interest in it. So we're very excited about that. We're excited about the Loop the Lake Trail and the access that the humans have to their natural resources that weren't always there. When you look at our park system on the east side of the lake, it is second to none. We're going to have a $25 million investment in MBT Bank Stadium later this year, and we're going to be signing a 25-year lease with the Mets. So that when you look at our entertainment infrastructure, whether it's our arts and cultural district downtown, whether it's the Syracuse Crunch, the Syracuse Mets, Syracuse University, the amphitheater, the State Fair, we really have entertainment infrastructure that is much, much larger and much, much better, our history, Greg Tripoli, than many other cities our size. So we're doing a lot of things right. We're a little bit hard on ourselves sometimes. But at this point, I'll take some questions, and we can get into other things as the questions come up. Yes, ma'am.
You clodhopped around one of the biggest issues in this county, and that's I-81.
Yes. Okay.
On purpose or not?
So, no. sure. Let me talk about that issue. So, all right. This issue. My attorney just told me the answer is one word. But all right, that's good. All right, that's good. So, I'm gonna talk to you about my personal opinion, and I'm gonna talk to you about where our administration is, because they're two different places. I appreciate and understand the impact better than most elected officials that I-81 had on the 15th Ward in the city of Syracuse. I was a city councilor. As a city councilor, I represented a lot of poor neighborhoods. As a county executive, I represent every neighborhood. Okay? So the same reasons why the city of Syracuse and the mayor support knocking it down to create connectivity again, and I think that's a plus of knocking it down, is it does create the connectivity. I'm not sold on a couple things, and that's okay if I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, and it's okay if I'm right. I'm not sold that knocking down 81 will create the tax base that people think it has. Most of that land will be state right away that they cannot give up. And so what you're talking about is, could private companies with their land in that corridor do different things? It won't create this land of investment. And I believe I'm right on that. If I'm wrong, I hope I am. But the same reason why that connectivity is important to the city of Syracuse, that piece of highway has really been what has connected the rest of the county, if you think about it. So this is a very difficult decision. And I think what's important for everybody to understand, and this is where I think this decision, the process to date, has gotten a little bit too, the rhetoric's been a little bit too hot. And and people aren't listening to each other, because if people are for a grid and they think that the grid is not going to have a negative impact on other communities, you're wrong. It will. But that doesn't mean that you still shouldn't do a grid, right? But so the, and I think that's where people have lost each other, because I'll give you one example. The town of Salina, if people were here when that highway went up, the town of Salina was farmland. It wasn't a town. It was a town, but it wasn't what the town of Salina is today. So the town of Salina is there because that infrastructure went up. So to suggest that knocking down that infrastructure won't have an impact on Salina isn't being intellectually honest. So that's where I think we've gotten way too out of bounds in this debate. So what do I think the best way to address, the best way to have the least amount of negative impacts are for the county of Onondaga as a whole, because that's my constituency, would be a community grid for the city of Syracuse and a tunnel to continue the traffic. I also know that that's the most expensive. And I also know, quite frankly, that the state of New York has not asked the federal government for $3.5 billion, okay? So that's my personal opinion. Where our administration is we're very much focused in on mitigating any decision that's made, which will be made very soon. So we're focused in on, if it's a grid, how do we address the issues in Salina, in the western suburbs with truck traffic, which certainly will have more, the east side of the county with 481, and how do we make sure that the growth in the lakefront and the investment in the lakefront that we have all made is not impacted in a negative way. So we've been working on strategies and projects, transportation, economic development, that we believe must be part of the decision if there's a community grid, or else the state is failing us. If it's a grid with a tunnel, which I don't think it will be, because they haven't asked for the money. So that's usually what you do when you put a capital project forward. You usually come up with your budget first and figure things out. Because they did not do that this way, it has allowed the community to divide. We would hope that some of the negative impacts on some of the streets in the city of Syracuse wouldn't be dead-ended, and we're looking at those as well. I believe the decision will be that it will be a grid, and that to avoid litigation, because there certainly could be litigation. There's about 80 different ways you could sue if you live in one of these communities. That mitigation has to be part of it, and we've spent about 2.5 months developing ways that we think you can mitigate away a lot of this. Not all of it, but a lot of it. So that's where our administration is. We can't let the momentum that we've built over the last 180 days with the city and the county and our towns and our villages, we can't let one decision divide us. And we're ready to play the role to make sure that the communities that are on the short end of the stick on the decision get the help they need so that they don't lose ground either.
Hi.
Hi.
So the Urban Jobs Task Force just released their racial equity impact statement.
Okay.
And so when you were talking about redevelopment and economic development and poverty and generational poverty, do you plan to use that data, that information, to help push or to even decide how you want to work through the economic development, especially with construction, when we're talking about I-81 or any of the other works that you're talking about? And if so, how?
Yeah, we do. And so I think if you look at our administration, what we've done in the previous administration and county government, nobody's done more on this issue than us, period. We led the way with MWBE hiring requirements. We made it policy with the legislature. When you look at our large capital projects, the actual goals we met in this space in the with M's and W's, we're second to none. The issue we have is making sure that there's a correlation when you give a minority business a contract that you have more minorities working on the job site, or if you give a W contract that they have more minorities and W's on the site to address that. I don't think we've met the mark there, and I think that's something that we've directed our purchasing department to really look at, is so that we're not just procuring for the owners, that the owners are going back into neighborhoods and hiring minorities and women to work on these projects. When it comes to minority hiring in the county, County Executive Mahoney did a tremendous job. And the county workforce is, if you look at our minority population data, we're about 14.6% minority in Onondaga County. Our county workforce is about 14% minority right now. That moved up from about 7% when Joni started. We have a goal by 2022 to have our county workforce at 20% minority. And we put that out in our State of the County address. We're actually putting dollars behind it. We're asking the legislature to invest in the personnel to make that happen. It's difficult to do that because Many of these positions are tested positions. We don't have flexibility to hire whom we want to. So it's going to be a really strategic, extensive effort, but we're really excited about that. But when you look at the development, you know, we have at our IDAs, we had the local labor policy a lot longer than before the city did, the county did. And you look at our MWBE policy, it's a lot higher than the city of Syracuse's. So we've actually been leading on this. We want to continue to lead on this because, as you're alluding to, the best way to get a family out of poverty is to get them a job, and work is dignity. So we're any ideas that you think we're missing the mark on, please reach out to us. But we're proud of what we've done, and we're proud of where we want to go. Hello.
This is a question regarding your poverty presentation. And this has to do with transportation.
Yep.
Central recently came out with a rapid transit proposal that would go into the poverty area and try to bring people to jobs easier and quicker. What do you think of that proposal?
I think it's a good idea. And we supported Central getting more state funding this year. They did. That doesn't move the needle enough for this project. But when you look at our short, mid, and long-term solutions, this is certainly a long-term solution. The other thing that's interesting, that we're having our second round of the Alliance for Economic Inclusion, which is a competitive process for funding for private sector and nonprofit partners to address poverty. And we've said to people that we really are interested in transportation-based projects to help get rid of that barrier to work. But your workforce, your adult workforce that is repurposing themselves, or they are adult learners going back to school at BOCES or the city school district, is younger. That generation that got misplaced when the manufacturing jobs left has either retired or found new careers. So what's really interesting with the opportunity when it comes to transportation is these folks are 18 to 30 now when they go back to BOCES or to get their GEDs or to get their trade education. They all know how to use technology, and they all know how to use smartphones. So part of what the transportation strategy needs to be moving forward is utilizing the technology, the ride sharing, and whatnot. So we're trying to innovate and learn with that. We want people to be innovative because we have funding this year that we can go towards good transportation projects to address this issue. But we do support the Central High Speed project as well. We think that is certainly an all of the above strategy.
Good morning. My question goes to, we talked a lot about the network of piping throughout the county and maybe the county taking ownership, et cetera. With whether you talk about I-81 coming through the city, whichever way it's going to come, and the feds talking about major infrastructure type funding. They talk in terms of highways and things like that, not necessarily water lines, I would suspect. But wouldn't that be part of possibly a federal infrastructure thing that could help provide the funding for this type of takeover of the pipelines, because we're not unique necessarily in this type of problem throughout the country?
Yeah, it could. One of the problems with the way, those of us who have been around a while remember this, but there used to be earmarks, right? Everybody started hating the earmarks because the system got abused. But part of the reason the sewer unit charge is as low as it is today, and the sewer unit charge is about 70% lower than the national average, is because of Jim Walsh bringing back so many earmarks for Onondaga Lake. So everybody hated it, but man, do I wish we had earmarks. So the real problem with how it works now, Ed, is that everything gets block granted to the state. So we have to go to the state. Senator Schumer, Congressman Katko, Senator Gillibrand can do a great job, get more wastewater infrastructure money. It then goes to Albany. We can't get it directly. And then Albany has programs now that you have caps. So we think we have a pretty large commitment from Albany to help with this. But then that's all they can do for 5 years unless they change the way the program works. But I would love, to be honest with you, coming from the legislature, the power of the purse. I would love Congress to take a little bit more responsibility with appropriating funding again, because that would give us the opportunity to really have conversations and secure funding for specific problems in our communities.
Hi, Victoria Coit with Q Sculpture.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good to see you.
My question is, does the county have a marketing strategy to attract business on a national scale for the purpose of retaining and attracting young professionals to the area?
We are starting to develop that, and the there's a lot of people that kind of that do economic development. You have Center State, McNee represents manufacturers, the city has a team, we have a team, the state has ESD. But my approach is that usually the leaders at the top get blamed when something goes wrong. So to outsource your responsibility in this space doesn't make sense. So we've beefed up our team and we're developing. Again, when we look at what we should be doing, job retention is the number one goal of any economic development department, in my opinion. And so you need to know your customer. That's what we're in the process of doing. When you look at new growth opportunities, you should go after companies or in areas where it makes logistical sense for them to be here. I've grown on this. When I was a city councilor my first term, I used to think, why can't we just go give a 50-year pilot agreement to Boeing and we'd get Boeing here? That's not how these things work. It needs to make sense for them to be here. And logistically, we have a lot of strengths, being 4 hours away from Toronto, Montreal, Philadelphia, New York City, Boston. So we have the population as an advantage for having all that population here. So we're developing that, and so far we're seeing, because we're trying to develop that infrastructure, we're seeing a lot of new opportunities coming our way just by having conversations. But that's a work in progress. And again, we don't pretend to have all the good ideas. So any ideas people have, just please always reach out to me, send me an email, let me know what's on your mind.
I have the perfect bookend question for that one.
Sure.
Which is, how are we going to retain the 20% of our workforce that's on the verge of retiring, as in addition to those that are even older, who still are huge contributors, and if they choose to leave, they take the tax base with them?
Yeah, so if the one of the things it goes into, why do seniors leave? And a lot of times that goes into property taxes, affordability, when you get on fixed incomes at that point in your life. So what we can control locally is we can control making sure that we have safe neighborhoods, making sure that we have desirable neighborhoods with arts and culture and things to do for people, and making sure that it's affordable. And on our end, Mike referenced it in the beginning, but when it comes to property taxes in the county, we've actually, I think we're the only government, I know we are locally, but not many can say this, we've cut the property tax rate 8 straight years. It might even be a little bit longer. I've only been around for 7. And we've been able to do that because we've been innovative with our own budget. And at the same time, we've made investments, economic development investments, in areas that drive sales tax. Because sales tax is our only growing revenue. It's the city's only growing revenue. So industry that produces that economic activity, whether it's tourism or destiny, things to do, the state fair, all these things all build into that pot, bringing in outside spending. That helps fuel government. That helps fuel the services we provide. And that allows us to cut taxes. So our budget is $1.4 billion. We only have a tax levy of about $143 million. So the other money comes from sales tax and some state aid and some federal aid. But I think if we're a community where people want to live, work, and play, the other piece of that is keeping the young people here, right? So keep people's grandkids here, and their kids here, they're gonna want to stay. We don't mind if people go to Florida for 4 or 5 months a year, not 6. So that's kind of the strategy, and we're doing it on the education side, preparing the jobs that we have here that are growing here. To keep them here, we got to have the workforce. but also as those opportunities grow in this new economy, those are going to be great jobs for our kids to come here. When I was getting out of college, we didn't really have that opportunity. A lot of my friends went to New York City and Boston, but the good news there is a lot of them came back to raise families. And so, you know, it's okay if the young people leave for a little bit as long as they come back. Where they don't come back from, where we got to keep them from going, we got to block it, is if they go to the Carolinas, we don't get them back. But if they go to Boston, D.C., Philly, New York City, a lot of times we'll get them back. But hopefully that answered some of your question. And one of the things, too, with that they talked about at this conference is because our population as a country has not grown, when automation and AI comes into the economy, we won't have the job displacement that we had 20 and 30 years ago with technology. There will be more jobs available, or what a lot of economists are saying now. And that's why having sound immigration policy needs to happen. Because unless we have kids, we're going to need more kids. We're going to need more residents.
In your remarks, you referred to the number of towns, villages, special districts. Is anything, and there's been over the years many studies on cost-effective changes in local government, yeah, consolidations, modernization of local government, is anything happening in that arena that we're not aware of?
Yeah, so I know Kathy's here. Kathy could confirm this, but from the consensus report, the two things that were in our control in county government, we did. So the recommendation was to merge the wholesale and retail provider of water, Metropolitan Water Board and Aqua. We did that. That has saved well over $1 million a year in operating costs, which has gone right into the capital investment. So it saved the ratepayers money. We passed a law to take the ownership of the two jails, or the management of the two jails. We all own the jails together. Under the sheriff, to create efficiencies. We did that. The voters voted for it. We are starting to convene a shared service council that county executives are in charge of, where we bring all of our supervisors, our village mayors, our school districts, the city mayor together, and we look at ways to do business together. A lot of these municipalities have been doing this. It hasn't been focused on. And the last shared service council, the city, the school district, and the county went and did Medicare Advantage together for some of our health care benefits for our seniors. And because we went together with that buying power, we saved over $5 million. And so now we took part of that. We're going to get a check, the three of us, from the state of New York for $5 million split three ways. So we're looking at those opportunities now. We want to talk about it, get everybody together at a table. Just to talk is always good, too, as well. But we've always said to any of our partners, if the county government is in the business, we do it today, and a partner is in that business and they want to get out of that business, we will work with them on a plan to get out of the business. So where we don't think it makes sense is for county government to get into a business we're not in and pretend we know what we're doing better than somebody else.
Ryan, can you touch briefly on what the county is doing to reduce our carbon footprint?
Yeah, so this is an area we're looking at now. Right now, we're really interested in some solar opportunities. We obviously have innovative programs like Save the Rain. We have working on how can we, with an energy consultant now, we have procurement out to look at ways we can do things more efficiently, more renewables, work that into our policies. But I think we're pretty progressive in this space. And I know there's more that we're doing that I'm just not thinking of, but it's something that we know we're stewards of the planet, and we're very cognizant of our role, especially being in control of the wastewater system, what that means to the environment. And learning from the mistakes at Onondaga Lake, we've spent close to $500 million together cleaning that lake up, just of public money. So we're very cognizant of our role. But again, any ideas people have that they know of that they think we can do better, we're all ears.
In the past, on occasion, there's been tension between CIDA and OCIDA. Mm-hmm. Have you and Ben Walsh had conversations about this?
Yeah.
And if so, what was the outcome of those conversations?
Yeah, we've had really good conversations. One of our proposals in the state of the county was to take the Carnegie Building, and we're going to put our planning, our economic development, and our community development departments there, and we've invited the mayor to do the same. And we think we have a lot of areas to learn from each other and complement each other and strengthen the overall operations for the region. But the mayor and I have talked about this. We have no interest in having OCIDA get involved with a city project unless we own the real estate or we already have a legacy investment. So the mayor and I are very much on the same page for that. At some point, we'd love to have one IDA. That's something that we think that I very much could support. But for example, raw steel, we own that piece of dirt. We've spent well over almost $2 million on it. We'll spend more than that. When an economic development project comes, OCIDA will do that project because we own the dirt. We've invested in it. And the mayor is very comfortable with that approach. And again, for those of you who don't know, the mayor and I have known each other our whole lives. And we've been friends. We went to the same school together. We grew up 2-3 blocks away from each other. And then we've worked professionally together in various roles our whole adult lives. So we're friends, and I think there's a level of trust there that hasn't been there in the past. So we're not going to let a economic development project fee get in the way of the progress that we think the community is building right now.
All right, please join me in thanking our county executive, Ryan McNamara.